Welcome back to Helping Families Go Beyond, the podcast by Beyond the Spectrum. I'm your host, Lauren Carpenter, and today we'll be speaking with Dawn Wisniewski, who is our very own on-site BCBA at Beyond the Spectrum. Now, BCBA stands for Board Certified Behavior Analyst, and she works in the ABA therapy field. ABA therapy stands for Applied Behavioral Analysis, and we'll be talking more about that with her in just a few moments. All right. Well, Ms. Dawn, we are so happy to have you here on the podcast for this episode. I'm excited to talk with you, and thank you for taking the time to join us. And so I was wondering if you could introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your experience with the school and being a BCBA.
So I'm Dawn Wisniewski, and I am a board-certified behavior analyst. I've been in the field a long time, like over 20 years. So, but I was a school teacher and a clinician, and I also provide training in positive behavior support and classroom management to schools. So here at Beyond the Spectrum, I do exactly that. I was a clinician, and I still am. I will be doing some clinical work again shortly. And I've been working with the teachers and the directors and the parents and families and kids in helping the students become as independent as possible and help them with social significant behaviors.
That's great. And so that's awesome that you have the ABA experience as a BCBA and then also the classroom experience. That's such a good blend, especially for the students here. And I was wondering if you could provide a brief overview of what ABA therapy is and who it can benefit.
Okay, so that's like a huge loaded question. And they actually really, all the questions are, because there's such a history with ABA therapy. There's so many components to ABA therapy, from how it started to how it's used and applied today. But really, if we want to really get down to the basics of what ABA therapy is, there's the talk of applied behavior analysis, and then there's ABA therapy. So with ABA therapy, we're taking all that scientific research throughout the past, and we're using it and applying it to individuals, all individuals, in increasing those socially significant behaviors that we do want, so we can all be better members of society, or not better members. I don't want to say that, because there's no one that's bad. It's just that, how do we contribute to society? How can we be independent, and how can we give something back to our society? Because if we don't do that, well, we usually don't feel the drive to be happy and successful and to form relationships and live.
It sounds like ABA can be applied in a lot of real world settings. Like, you can shape behaviors to make them work for each individual and make them independent and kind of on their own path.
When we look at ABA therapy, when we look at that, so is independence important? Yes, it is. But In our world, when we talk about socially mediated interactions, well, we're all human, so we need to interact. Like, everything we do, just about everything we do, is somehow connected to a person or people. Okay, everything that we do, from our jobs to the buildings that we use to the beds that we sleep in, we have that. And those are in ABA therapy, that's what we can control and manipulate more to be able to, get those behaviors that we would like to see increased. Now, right, we can't look at things internally so much, because a lot of our learners can't explain it. But if they can explain it, sure, we will absolutely take a look at that. And that's why in ABA therapy, you hear all the time, well, we need to rule out the physical. We need to rule out the physical. And the reason why we need to rule out the physical is because sometimes you can't tell us what's going on inside, what's hurting you, or why you're acting that way. If you have a headache or something like that, or maybe there's something biological that can be fixed with a different type of medicine, because we are therapy, so we're considered a treatment, but maybe it can be fixed with some other treatment. And then we can work on those socially significant behaviors, which, by the way, that also includes communication. Like it's all in there. Anything to do with other people, it's social. It's socially significant.
Okay, wonderful. And so it sounds like people that work in the ABA therapy field will work on like self-advocacy with clients.
Absolutely. And that is such a goal. Okay, so boy, this is a lot of good stuff. But like so when we talk about self-advocacy, we have to get the learner to a point where they can express themselves. And there's different modalities that we can use if they cannot vocally speak. There's written language, there's pictures, sign language, gestures. Like there's so many different ways we can communicate that's better than, let's say, hitting yourself on the head, you know, hurting yourself. So we have to help get that type of communication out. And it also communication has so much to do with them, people understanding what's being said. And that's a whole different skill, because you got to process the information and then follow through with it and comprehend it. There's so much going on with that. And we can't get them to self-advocacy without those little baby steps of getting them to that point.
Right. Okay. So it sounds very incremental, the way that you all work. Speaking of that, what are some of the techniques that you see people use in the field, and how can those be applied?
So when we talk about the little steps that we take to build to greater and larger skills, we call those like discrete trials. So we will break things down into smaller components and then build on it. And it's really used in a lot of teaching strategies also, you know, when teachers teach, they use those methods too. You're building the skill up. So those components are discrete trial. And some of the strategies that we use, it's really dependent on the individual. We like to really use positive reinforcement, and we like to use, so it's easier for me to explain if we take away the idea of, which is probably going to be a question or next, but it's better to say what we don't do. What we don't do is we don't use harmful methods, such as, like, I don't know where, well, I do know where, but that's a whole nother thing. Historically, like, people think that we're going to use some kind of shock treatment, or we're going to use spankings or something like that, but we don't use any of that. What we do is we use things that they like, what people like, in order to increase the behavior and that we want. And in science, we have found that, yes, if we reinforce with things that people like, it's more likely to maintain that behavior, and it's more likely that they can get that reinforcement in their environment without an individual therapist giving it to them. So, so basically we're using things that people like. Those are the strategies. It's based on the individual. It's based on, the scientific research, the different strategies that we have researched and found to that have worked.
Right. Okay. So it sounds very specialized for each client, which I think can be very helpful for them. I think it's great that it can be modified that way so that it can help them reach their own goals. And so when you're talking about doing data collection and then analyzing that data for a client, how can that help with treatment planning as you're working with the client's goals?
So the data, so that, and that's the big part of ABA is that we do collect data. Our goals are explaining, predicting, and changing the behavior, describing the behavior also. So we've got to know what behavior we're looking for in ABA, and we have to be able to describe it. So then we can measure it, and then we can provide some sort of strategy or treatment to change that behavior. So we're decreasing those unwanted behaviors, which could be self-injury, which could be aggression, which could be property destruction, and replacing it with something that's not harmful to that individual or others. So, you know, whether it's being able to, and most of it, it's always communication, actually. Like, how do you ask for something? How do you tell someone what's going on or what you need? The data collection, we will, so when you take the data and you monitor it, what you do is you look at the data, and if it is not working, then you need to do something different and change it to help that person, the learner. Okay. So that's what the data is all about. And it should be monitored closely. And because behavior is always changing, guess what? Those strategies will change. Because if someone that's is advancing, you're not going to leave. Let's say your target is the person will ask, be able to request five items, you know, like water, maybe using the bathroom, maybe getting food. Well, once they master that and you see that some of those unwanted behaviors decrease, what are you going to do? You're going to look at that data, and then guess what? You're going to change it. You're going to update it. So data collection is all important. Data collection must happen in order to provide good ABA therapy.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. And I know I've seen some of the, I mean, I know how meticulous you have to be with the data collection. I've seen some of the therapists that work around the school, and they have the systems on their iPads, and then they'll have the clickers to keep track of everything. And I'm just sure that it takes a lot of focus and that attention to detail to be able to monitor all of that and change it for each learner.
And that actually, when you said that, you brought up a great point with how difficult it is to provide therapy, mainly because usually in the perfect world, it would be somebody collecting the data, someone incorporating the, what we call the sort of, like the instruction or demands, but it's really just kind of like providing those instructions. And then a third person using prompting strategies to help that learner respond. But we don't have that. We have one person given the therapy, taking the data collection and prompting, which is not as efficient. So it would be great if insurance companies would allow us to have three people do it, because you know what? I think treatment would happen a lot faster and there'd be a lot more success rate with that. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And so having all that responsibility as a therapist, as an RBT. Also, I really like how you used learner instead, because I think that's more accurate. I think I've always said client, and I think client might come off as a little clinical, a little medical, or I learned something new.
Oh, thank
that.
You.
When you're working with a learner and you have all of these roles as an RBT, as a BCBA, how do you work with other professionals like teachers or other therapists? And how do you come up with a well-rounded approach for each learner?
So part of ABA therapy includes working with everyone that is part of that learner's life as much as possible, because if we don't do that, we're not going to be able to get like that carry through and follow through, and it will only confuse the learner. I think the number one thing is, though, you have to consider how the family lives, how they do things. You have to consider, like, if the learner is in school, we have adult learners also, but if they're in a school, like, how is that environment there? How does a learner be successful in a classroom or group environment? And then we always, always work with PTs, OTs, and speech therapists, physical therapists, all other therapists, everyone, because they also have some expertise that we may not have, you know, because there is the physical component of, like, a big example is with feeding therapy. Mm-hmm. Like, I get a lot of families, you know, oh, they're a picky eater. They won't eat. What can we do? We can absolutely put in some strategies in place, but we have to consider the physical component too, because they may have difficulty swallowing.
Sure.
There's just so many reasons why they may find food aversive. So we have to work together and figure those things out. So,
yeah. That's mm-hmm. wonderful. I see that here at Beyond the Spectrum with you all. Just the amount of collaboration with people coming together for learners, trying to think of different like reasons why something's happening and possible solutions for it. And I'm sure it takes a lot having to like consider all the different perspectives from other people.
Yes. And we do at Beyond the Spectrum, we have called the Collab Lab. I love that. Where all the professionals here, we get together and once a month, and we discuss what's happening, what can we do better, answering questions for each other. So we absolutely, like, Beyond the Spectrum totally encompasses that, you know, like the whole community, the whole environment of that learner. Absolutely.
That's great. So on the topic of like working with others and applying ABA therapy in different settings, have you ever come across any kind of misconceptions or myths about ABA that you could maybe speak the truth about or set straight a little bit?
Yeah, so that was a little bit when I brought up the electric shock therapy. So no, we don't do that. And that's not something that is in our field of ABA that we do or practice. Now, I'm sure there's other probably psychotherapies or that do that, but we don't. BCBAs also, we're not psychiatrists and we're not psychologists. We do something entirely different. Do we work with psychologists and psychiatrists? Absolutely, 100%. Yes. Are we considered right now? Do we fall under the branch of psychology? Yes. But it really, in my opinion, it should really be a different branch. But we do all work together. And the other thing is also, I think a lot of people think that. Let me start here. It's unfortunate that people had a bad experience with ABA therapy. For whatever reason, they had a bad experience, and that's very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But if you have a bad experience with an ABA therapist, no matter what their credentials are, just like you would a medical doctor, get a second opinion. Mm-hmm. Try other people. because you do need to find who you match with. You know, everybody's not for everybody, and it's okay to look for someone else. We don't force. First of all, you should never be forcing a learner to do anything. We use reinforcement. We pair with reinforcement. We consider all the environments, all the variables to help a learner feel safe and comfortable. And when we use physical guidance, that does not mean we're forcing them to do something. If they do not want us to touch them, we're not going to touch them. We only physically guide them to, like, let's say they need help with writing. And a lot of our learners learn better if you physically guide them and then fade yourself from that, meaning stop touching them, you know, but usually we'll only touch them again, like if they want us to and they find it reinforcing. Otherwise, we're not going to do that. So I think that's a big misconception. If they're saying they don't want something, and that's a whole nother topic, it's called assent. If they're not letting us know that it's okay, we're not going to do it, or we shouldn't be doing it. Right. But we need to let them understand and teach them. And they have to trust us too and accept us. So there's no force going on with that, with ABA therapy.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Because I know it can be kind of a touchy topic for people. It can be a little controversial. So I know some people may, when they hear the phrase ABA, it can kind of set some alarms for people. But I know that it can be a really useful service for learners. It can help them in a lot of different ways.
Yes. It helps everybody. It really does everybody.
Yep. It ends up helping the whole family, which I think is the neat thing about it.
Yes.
And so that's kind of what you were talking about. It kind of answered my question with what families can do, what they should look out for if they're seeking a reliable provider. And you kind of answered those. If you have anything else you'd like to kind of advise families on picking an ABA provider and things they should look out for.
No, that's it. Like you can ask them that question, you can ask just a simple question. It was like, why do you think ABA therapy, some people are against ABA therapy. What do you think about that? And they should be able to tell you that, because we don't do that. And if they don't know that, I would kind of red flag that, like, well, okay. You know, but absolutely.
Okay. Good to know. And when families are wanting to start that process to get ABA started, what steps should they take for that? Is there any kind of like insurance approvals, or I know it can be a messy process, but so what do those steps look like for families?
Okay. So if you want to get ABA therapy specifically and have insurances cover it, of course, you know, anybody can private pay, right? You don't need a diagnosis of any kind. Because again, it is for everybody. It helps everyone. You don't necessarily have to have a diagnosis, but insurance companies will only pay usually if you have one. However, I have in the past got services approved if I proved medical necessity. And that means like, you don't necessarily have to go out and get another diagnosis. But if we're talking about there's things going on, like the self-injurious behaviors, or SIB, as we call it, if that's going on, and we're going to take care of that. If there's like some serious, scary elopement going on, you know, we can push hard to try and get those services covered through insurance. But usually you do need a diagnosis, unfortunately, but that's the way it works with insurance companies. If you have state insurance, or which is Medicaid also, or private insurance, or the health, your employer health insurance, they all have a little bit different requirements. But it will require pre-authorization. But the best thing I can tell you is to get a comprehensive diagnostic evaluation done. Because they do require that, and you need a medical doctor to refer you, your pediatrician, psychiatrist. They have to like give you a prescription, a referral from the doctor, and then they'll request, and then the insurance company will, of course, you'll request the evaluation, and you'll have to get that. Your ABA company will get that submitted. So find an ABA therapy provider, and you can go in and fill out all the intake paperwork, and then they'll guide you from there. Absolutely. And then also, if you ever want to actually just find a provider, you could go to BACB.com and go to the registry and put in your zip code, and it'll ask you the radius, you know, 10 miles, whatever it is, and you can put it in and all the people will show up, because some of the BCBAs do private work where they're not associated with the company, and some BCBAs are associated with the company, but they'll, if they want to be contacted, they'll have their information listed. And then if you want to contact that person directly, they'll point you in the right direction.
Okay, awesome. That's great to know. That's great to know for families. And finally, just to wrap it all up a little bit, is any kind of success stories or memorable experiences you've had working in the ABA field?
There's so many, so many that, my goodness. Like there's not just one that stands out in my head, because there's just been so many incredible moments. I mean, from just a learner simply starting to say a couple words, you know, asking for something, even if it's one word, to I have learners that have went into inclusion classrooms and testing out on their standardized testing in their age group, which is phenomenal. And just toilet training, using the bathroom and brushing their teeth. I mean, there's just so many success stories. And I have to say, like, you know, you have to look at like what is successful for that person.
Right. Yeah.
It's not about me. It's not about mom, dad. It's not about anything except that individual and what's successful for them. And in that way, like I've just seen so many amazing things, and just happiness with when they do something independently or gain an independence, or somebody understood what they wanted. It's the most amazing thing in the world.
Yeah. And that's actually something that we've talked about in other podcast episodes before, about how success can be measured in so many different ways. And it sounds like ABA therapy really embodies that as well. But just how success can be monumental in so many different ways to so many different students. It looks so different depending on the learner and their needs. And so I think that is also a really cool thing about it, is how many ways things can be celebrated and how many different ways that learners can see achievement through their treatment plans. So I think that's wonderful. And I just thought of this. I wanted to ask you what the requirements are for a BCBA, like what kind of education and hours do you have to complete for that certification?
Ooh, they keep upping it. So, but yeah, you have to complete a relevant master's degree program or related master's degree program. They do have a master's degree in ABA, applied behavior analysis specifically. Okay. But if you're going to be a clinician an actual ABA analyst or ABA therapist, you have to go through supervision and training. I think it's 2,000 hours now. It's a lot more, but you do have to go through a lot and sit for a board, the board certification exam. So there's a lot to it.
I think this is all great information, all of it.
Oh, well, there is a question on here that I really actually like that you had on here. Should I read it?
Sure. Yeah.
What are some of the key principles and techniques used in ABA and how are they applied in real world settings? I'm not going to go into the key principles and techniques because that's a lot of stuff. But to give an example of a couple of things, like something that we will use if needed is a token economy system. We're supposed to fade that out, though. Like when we're given ABA therapy, that should be faded out. It's not set up to be used forever, but some people do need it. And then when you think about it, though, we all kind of use it forever. So our money system, our monetary system is a token economy system. We're getting rewarded for working. Mm-hmm. And then we take those tokens, money, and we buy stuff that we want. Mm-hmm. So we are a token economy system, our monetary system. So that's a huge example, you know, that we always learn about and refer to. So I just wanted to give you that example of it, because even though it's something that we don't want to depend on, we still do. And that's our economy system.
Yeah. Wonderful. I wanted to ask, and I meant to write it down, but I wanted to ask about the Community Insight series that you and Dr. Val do. And I was wondering if you could explain that a little bit and how you've been serving families through that. I know we are going on our third meeting with you guys, and I just know it's been a great resource for families. So if you could just talk a little bit about what you all cover and how you've been serving families through that Insight series.
So the it's actually the one coming up is going to be our second one, because that last one that we did, we had technical difficulties and it didn't happen. So unfortunately, we couldn't get that resolved in time. But the first one we did, we open it up to people that join, like just join during your lunch hour. It's Zoom. You don't have to come in. You can participate and say something if you want to, but you don't have to. If you have any questions, our first meeting kind of led into toileting in public, you know, and what to do. So what we want to do is just invite people in to share their knowledge, talk about it, and see if we can offer any strategies or resources. Like the next one that we're doing, we are hoping to get an expert in on what to prepare for adulthood, guardianship, what kind of funding as they, you know, enter adulthood and what you need to do now to prepare for it. So we just trying to pool all our resources in the community and pull it in. We're not trying to sell anything. We're not looking for people to advertise to sell anything. We just want to share everything we have, all our resources.
That's great. That's wonderful. I think that covers everything I've wanted to ask you for this episode. But so thank you so much for answering all of these questions and providing so much insight for the listeners. I think this is all such helpful information about ABA therapy and kind of discussing more about it and the techniques that are used. And I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to this. It's a great resource for people also. So I hope everyone listens to all the podcasts that you guys put out there. Absolutely. Oh. It's a good thing.
Thank you so much for joining us here today at Helping Families Go Beyond, the podcast by Beyond the Spectrum. For more resources or information, visit our website at beyondthespectrum.org.